Pancho had allowed them to ride to Ceres on an astro freighter, and now they waited aboard the half-finished habitat orbiting the asteroid. As far as Pancho or anyone else was concerned, they had been recruited to restart construction of the habitat. Only Fuchs and Noden, and the six themselves, knew better. "All right," Fuchs said, struggling against the surge of doubts and worries that churned in his guts. "It's midnight, then."
"Midnight," Noden agreed.
With a sardonic smile, Fuchs added, "We've got to get this over and done with before the peacekeeper troops arrive."
"We will,"
Noden said confidently. "Yes," Fuchs thought. "This will be over and done with in a few hours, one way or the other." The nearest thing to a restaurant on Ceres was the pub, where a mechanical food dispenser standing off in one corner offered packaged snacks and even microwavable full meals of a sort. Fuchs made a point of taking Amanda out to dinner that night. The pub was usually noisy, but this particular evening, the crowd was hushed. Everyone seemed tense with expectation. That worried Fuchs. Had news of his planned attack leaked out? Humphreys's people could be waiting for him. He could be leading his men into a trap. He mulled over all the possibilities as he picked, listlessly, at his dinner. Amanda watched him with worried eyes.
"You haven't been eating right ever since you came back from Selene," she said, her tone more concerned than accusatory.
"No, I suppose I haven't." He tried to make a careless shrug. "I sleep well, though, thanks to you." Even in the dim lighting, he could see her cheeks flush.
"Don't try to change the subject, Lars."
But she was smiling as she spoke. "Not at all. I merely... Do you mind if I sit with you?" They looked up and saw Chris Cardenas holding a dinner tray in both hands.
"No, of course not," said Amanda. "Do join us."
Cardenas put her tray on their table.
"The place is crowded tonight," she said as she sat on the vacant chair between them. "But awfully quiet," Amanda said. "It's as if everyone here is attending a funeral."
"The peacekeepers are due to arrive tomorrow," Cardenas said, jabbing a fork into her salad. "Nobody's happy with the thought."
Yes, said Fuchs, feeling relieved. "That's why everyone is so morose."
"They're worried. It's the first step in a takeover," Cardenas said.
"Takeover?"
Amanda looked startled at the idea.
"Who would take control of Ceres? The IAA?
Or the world government?"
"The world government? They don't have any authority beyond geosynchronous Earth orbit."
Cardenas shrugged elaborately. "It's their peacekeepers that arrive tomorrow."
"Looking for me," Fuchs said unhappily.
"What do you intend to do?" Cardenas asked. Looking squarely at Amanda, Fuchs said,
"I'm certainly not going to fight the peacekeepers."
Cardenas chewed thoughtfully for a few moments, swallowed, then said, "We did at Selene." Shocked, Amanda asked,
"What are you suggesting, Chris?"
"Nothing. Nothing at all. I'm just saying that six peacekeeper troops, in their nice little blue uniforms, aren't enough to force you to go back Earthside with them, Lars. Not if you don't want to go."
"You mean we should fight them?"
Amanda said, her voice hollow with fright. Cardenas leaned closer and replied, "I mean that I could name 100, 150 rock rats here who'd protect you against the peacekeepers, Lars. You don't have to go with them if you don't want to."
"But they're armed! They're trained soldiers!"
"Six soldiers against half the population of Ceres? More than half? Do you think they'd fire on us?" Amanda looked at Fuchs, then back to Cardenas.
"Wouldn't they just send more troops if these six were turned away?"
"If they tried that, I'm willing to bet that Selene would step in on our side."
"Why would Selene?"
"Because," Cardenas explained, "if the world government takes over Ceres, Selene figures they'll be next. They tried it once, remember?"
"And failed," Fuchs said.
"There are still nutcases Earthside who think their government should control Selene, and every human being in the whole solar system." Fuchs closed his eyes, his thoughts spinning. He had never had the faintest inkling that Selene would become involved in his fight.
"This could lead to war," he realized. "An actual war. Bloodshed. And destruction."
"No,"
he said aloud. Both women turned toward him.
"I will not be the cause of a war," Fuchs told them.
"You'll surrender to the peacekeepers tomorrow, then?" Cardenas asked.
"I will not be the cause of a war," he repeated.
After dinner, Fuchs led Amanda back to their quarters. She leaned heavily on his arm, yawning drowsily.
"Lord, I don't know why I feel so sleepy," she mumbled.
Fuchs knew. He had worried, when Cardenas sat at their table, that he wouldn't be able to slip the barbiturate into his wife's wine. But he had gotten away with it. Chris hadn't noticed, and now Amanda was practically falling asleep in his arms. She was far too gone to make love. He helped her to undress. By the time she lay her head on the pillow, she was peacefully unconscious. For a long time, Fuchs gazed down at his beautiful wife, tears misting his eyes.
"Goodbye, my darling," he whispered. "I don't know if I will ever see you again. I love you too much to let you risk your life for my sake. Sleep, my dearest."
Abruptly, he turned and left their apartment, carefully locking the door as he stepped out into the tunnel. Then he headed for the warehouse and his waiting men.
Oscar Jimenez was clearly worried as Fuchs led Nodan and four others of his employees up the tunnel toward the HSS warehouse. "There's only six of us," he said, his voice low and shaky as he shuffled along the dusty tunnel beside Fuchs. "I know it's after midnight, but they've probably got at least 10 guys in the warehouse." Fuchs and Nodan carried hand lasers, fully charged. The others held clubs of asteroidal steel pulled from the empty Helvetia warehouse shelves. All of them wore breathing masks to filter out the dust they were raising as they marched purposefully up the tunnel. "Don't worry," Fuchs assured him calmly. "You won't have to fight. If all goes as I've planned, there won't be a fight." "But then why?" "I want you to identify the man who murdered Inga." "He won't be there," the teenager said. "It took off, I told you." "Perhaps we'll see." "Anyway, they were wearing breathing masks and some kind of hats. I couldn't identify the guy if I saw him." "We'll see," Fuchs repeated. Fuchs stopped them at one of the safety hatches that stood every 100 meters or so along the tunnel. He nodded to one of the men, a life support technician who pried open the cover of the hatch's set of sensors. Fuchs motioned his men through the open hatch as the technician fiddled with the sensors. "Got it," he said at last. An alarm suddenly hooted along the tunnel. Fuchs twitched involuntarily, even though he had expected the blaring noise. The technician scurried through the hatch just before it automatically slammed shut. "Hurry," Fuchs shouted, and he started racing up the tunnel. A half-dozen bewildered HSS men were out in the tunnel, in front of the entrance to their warehouse, looking up and down as if searching for the source of the alarm. They were clad in light tan coveralls bearing the HSS logo. None of them wore breathing masks. "Hey, what's going on?" one of them yelled as he saw Fuchs and the others rushing toward them, raising billows of dust. Fuchs pointed his laser at them. It felt clumsy in his hand, yet reassuring at the same time. "Don't move," he commanded. 5 of the 6 froze in place. 2 of them even raised their hands above their heads, but the 6th one snarled, "What the fuck do you think you're doing?" and started to duck back inside the warehouse entrance. Quite deliberately, Fuchs shot him in the leg. The laser cracked once, and the man yowled and went down face first into the dust, a smoking, charred spot on the thigh of his coveralls. A part of Fuchs's mind marveled that there was no recoil from the laser, no smoke or smell of gunpowder. They herded the 6 men inside the warehouse, 2 of them dragging their wounded companion. 2 more HSS men were at the desktop computer, trying to determine what was causing the alarm signal when all the life support systems were solidly in the green. Completely surprised, they raised their hands above their heads when Fuchs trained his laser on them. They looked disgruntled once they realized that they were prisoners. Fuchs made them sit on the floor, hands on their knees. 4 mini-tractors were sitting just inside the warehouse entrance. Fuchs detailed 4 of his men to rev them up. Then they went through the aisles, pulling down anything that looked as if it had come from the Helvetia warehouse, and loading it onto the tractors. "There'll be a couple of dozen more of our people on their way up here," said the man Fuchs had shot. He sat with his companions, both hands clutching his thigh. Fuchs could not see any blood seeping from his wound. The laser pulse cauterizes as it burns through the flesh, he remembered. "No one will come here," he said to the wounded man. "The alarm sounded only in this section of the tunnel. Your friends are sleeping peacefully in their quarters." Finally, the laden tractors were parked out in the tunnel, heaped high with crates and cartons that bore the Helvetia imprint. "I think that's everything," said one of Fuchs's men. "Not quite," Fuchs said. Turning to Jimenez, he asked, "Do you recognize any of these men?" The youngster looked